Visioneers, Episode 14, The Wedding, Dramatic Beginning.
The morning of the wedding, Sunday, dawns clear and bright. We are reminded immediately of the five people for whom this will be a day with destiny. Esther and Mark, of course, Colonel Greenberg, Camille Rashid, Carlos Palmyra, El Condor.
The whole of the wedding scene shifts rapidly among events involving these people. First, we see Greenberg at the wedding site, early, with his soldiers, meticulously checking and rechecking the security.
Next, we see Mark in his apartment, impatiently waiting for Mohammed Hussein, his best man. Instead of Mohammed in person, he gets a phone call.
Mark, it's Mohammed here. Where are you? What's happening?
There's been a development. I've just spoken to Camel. He's still waiting on the other line. He has a lead on where Harrigan is, you know, the man who's supposed to be Palmyra's mastermind here.
Yes, I know. Go on. What about Harrigan?
Camel has word that he's holed up in a building in Yemen Moshi, right beside the wedding site. Greenbird's men are swarming all around there, but so far they've missed him. Camel is somewhere in that vicinity too, but he can't get through because of the soldiers.
Well, he's got to talk to Greenberg. Have you told him that?
Of course, but he still wants to do it his way.
Well, you tell him from me that I'm putting my life and Esther's in his hands and I expect him to work with Greenberg. Surely he can see, too, that it's the best strategy for him politically. The Palestinians here have everything to gain from cooperating with the Israelis at this point. You have to make him see that.
I'll try. I'll get back to him now. Hopefully I'll be at your place in half an hour.
Okay. I'll alert Greenberg.
Mark touches the pinhead transmitter in his lapel, and instantly Greenberg answers.
Colonel, there's some news. I've just spoken to Mohammed. He's talking right now to Camel Rashid. Camel says he's located Harrigan somewhere in the Yemen Moshi, but he can't get through because of your men. Mohammed's trying to get Camel to speak with you. Will you work with him?
And if he knows something we don't, of course we will. But I'm not playing cat and mouse with him on this. Do you have anything more specific on location?
No, nothing. You'll have to work with Camel.
Well, I'm on alert for his call.
Good. Let me know when something breaks.
Mark disconnects. He turns and catches a glimpse of himself in a full-length mirror. He smiles ruefully in spite of the situation, all dressed up in his black tuxedo for the wedding. We're off to a heck of a start, he reflects. Then he thinks of Esther, imagines her loveliness and vulnerability in her white wedding gown. His fingers involuntarily clench into balled fists.
Come on, Mohammed. You've got to pull this off.
Colonel Greenberg searches the rows of houses in Yemen Moshi with his binoculars. Attractively remodeled in 19th-century style of original construction, the stone buildings look inviting and peaceful. But the experienced soldier of many campaigns knows that behind the friendly facade can lie the greatest danger.
If you're up there, Harrigan, we'll flush you out.
The cellular telephone on his belt buzzes. He snatches it up.
Greenberg.
At first, there's silence on the other end, then breathing, barely audible, finally, a voice.
This is Camel Rashid. You know who I am?
Yes.
Do you have information on Harrigan?
Yes.
I could deal with this myself, but your soldiers are in the way.
Just tell me what you know and we'll take care of it.
Silence. Greenberg presses.
Look, Rashid, we both find this distasteful. Up to this minute, I've doubted everything I've been told about what you said about bombs and snipers. Now I'll tell you this. On my word as a soldier, if you can give me information to protect the people in my charge, you'll get the credit for it.
I don't trust you, Greenberg. But this time I have no choice. The Palestinians must not be blamed for what can happen here. I'll give you directions to where Harrigan is.
Now action moves to the wedding site. Mark and Mohammed arrive to a rousing reception from several thousand people already there. Shortly afterwards, the first break in the tension comes. Greenberg's voice comes in on the MCD.
We've got him, Mark.
It was the first time the colonel had ever used Mark's name, and his voice had an exuberant edge to it.
He was perched up here in a false attic. That's how we missed it the first time we went through the house. He had quite a setup. High-powered rifle, telescopic sights, and a clear view of the stage. He was watching you up there when we burst in on him. It looks like he's been here for a few days. He had a full supply of food for at least a week. One thing, though, this is not Harrigan. I don't know who he is. We're interrogating him now. Do you think there's any more of them? And what about Harrigan? No, I don't know yet. We're pressing him for answers, and my men are going through every house again. We should know something within the half hour. Then we can decide what to do about the ceremony. What about Camel Rashid? Well, I haven't heard from him again. I think he's somewhere in the neighborhood. Looks like you were right about him. I'll be the first to say so. Now, I want to see what we can get out of this fellow. Go ahead, Colonel, and good luck.
Now, Rabbi Ben Sabbat and Reverend Gordon Ringthorpe arrive. They are accompanied by Mama Teresa, and there is another rousing reception by the crowd. Pamela Barrett is also on hand for ZNN.
And then we shift to Camel Rashid trying to go it alone in search for Harrigan in the streets of the neighborhood adjoining the wedding site.
Meanwhile, most of the official guests have arrived down on the grounds. Mark and Mohammed are in a tent by the acoustical shell. Greenberg comes through again on the MCD. Mark steps aside to a corner of the tent to hear more clearly. Mohammed notices and comes over.
Mark, can you hear me?
Greenberg is asking with the same exuberant edge to his voice as before.
Go ahead, Colonel. You're coming in clear. We've nailed a second one, just a few doors down the street from the first. It's not Harrigan either, but both of them are confirming separately that Harrigan himself wasn't part of the kill. I'm inclined to think he's monitoring it from somewhere else. He knows by now that we've taken his men out, and he's probably getting out fast himself. You think you've got them all, then? Oh, we can't be sure, but that's my guess. The surveillance plane reported some movement further back up the hill. We're checking that now. But it's too far away to be at a strike position.
Mark looks at his watch.
Well, we've just over 10 minutes away from the scheduled start of the ceremony. What are you recommending about your contingency plan? I think we've removed the need to make that change. I say go ahead with the ceremony as planned.
Mark knows this decision should swoop over him like a wave of relief, because he didn't favor Greenberg's contingency plan from the start. But there's something somewhere at the back of his mind still troubling him.
What about Camel? Have you heard anything further from him? Nothing. Unless he calls me, I've got no way to reach him. Give me a moment, will you, Colonel?
Mark shuts off the transmitter, closes his eyes, and breathes deeply. Mohammed, watching him closely, comes up.
What is it, Mark? What's happening?
Greenberg says they've nabbed a second sniper. He thinks they've got them all and is recommending we go ahead as planned.
Well, that's good news, isn't it?
Yes, I guess so. But I don't know. There's something still not...
Great Scott, Mohammed! Do you see that?
See what?
There, on the television monitor. Is that Baba Satyananda? Do you see him?
Why, yes. I didn't even know he was here. I'm sure he didn't arrive with the others.
Now, that's strange. If I didn't know better, I say he was looking directly at the both of us and smiling.
The television image zooms in as a close-up. The luminous brown eyes look out at them as a gentle smile plays on the lips, and Baba gently nods his head up and down. Then the camera cuts away to another image.
What is it, Mark? What does that mean?
I'm not sure, Mohammed, but I think Baba just came by to reassure us.
He clicks his transmitter on.
Colonel, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm listening.
We agree with you. We'll go ahead as planned.
Good. Oh, and by the way, I've just received word your bride is at the entrance to the amphitheater. A mazel tov to both of you.
Now the first part of the procession begins. The rabbi and reverend are leading. The cantor and Mama Teresa come next. Mark's parents are following. Then Mohammed. And finally, Mark. The crowd is wild with enthusiasm. Everyone is waiting for the bride.
But there's other action going on in the streets nearby. Camel Rashid has entered the house and finds it deserted. He moves to the second floor. and that's also deserted. Now he starts to go up a dark spiral staircase to the third floor. Step by step, he moves, pausing, listening on each one. Nothing disturbs the silence of the house. Somewhere in the distance, he can hear the sound of music and cheers, but inside, nothing. Then, halfway up, in the final darkest stretch of the stairs, the briefest sound, a rustle, then something hard crashing down into his face, knocking him backward, a boot heavy-heeled with the full driving force of a leg behind it. Off balance and hurt, Camel falls. Suddenly someone's on top of him. There's a brief glint of steel in the half-light at the bottom of the stairs before he feels a searing pain in his side. Enraged and hurt, he summons all his strength and flings his assailant off. He still has his revolver in his right hand. With his left, he involuntarily reaches for his side to stem the searing pain. He feels blood, warm and wet, running through his fingers. But there's no time for that. His attacker is coming back at him. At point-blank range, Camel fires one shot into the hurtling body. The sound of the gun explodes like a cannon in the confined space. The figure checks, then falls heavily on top of him. With a curse, Camel pushes him off. In disgust and disbelief, he stares down at a face covered by the blue checkered mask of the Palestinian headdress. He tears the mask aside and finds himself staring into the dying eyes of a young Arab man he knows as Anwar Kutub, a high, hot-headed firebrand who had been one of his most violent opponents in his refusal to buy arms from El Condor. Nauseated both by the pain in his side and the realization that Palestinians are now involved in this business, Camel begins to claw his way back up the stairs to whatever lies in store on the third floor.
Colonel Greenberg has arrived on the scene, but because of the position of the place, he's not too concerned until he hears a shot and rushes in.
And the scene cuts back to Camel.
With a final burst of energy, Camel Rashid heaves himself to the top of the winding stairs. He's stopped by a locked door. Feeling around in the dark, he holds his revolver close to the latch and blows it apart. The door swings open. Inside, a small attic room is lit by a single light and a small window at the front. The window immediately catches his attention. Just inside, a telescope is set up, and beside it, a black box with headphones attached, a transmitter of some kind. Beside that, a small television monitor glows in the half-light, its volume turned down to a whisper. An empty chair stands next to the equipment. Camel lurches in, looking for the operator, but there's no one in the room. He feels a wave of nausea sweep over him. His eyes lose focus. He fights it off. Then he sees a side door half open. He stumbles over to it and looks through. Another set of stairs running straight down. He sees the blur of a figure at the bottom. His legs give out from under him. He falls through the doorway as he grips his revolver with both hands and fires two more shots down the stairwell. Unconscious, Camel Rashid lies sprawled half in and half out of the room across the small landing at the top of the stairs. This is how Colonel Greenberg finds him, 1 minute later when he comes crashing into the room. Greenberg quickly sizes up the situation.
Look to that man!
He barks to one of his own men just behind him. Without waiting, the colonel bounds over to the equipment at the window. He kicks the chair aside, noting the television monitor is tuned to the scene at the amphitheater below. He looks through the telescope. It doesn't make sense. As he had concluded before, the house doesn't have a good view of the amphitheater. The telescope isn't even focused on the stage. Instead, it's trained on the television camera operator immediately below the broadcast platform, where the commentators are describing the scene in the amphitheater. It doesn't make sense. Greenberg picks up the headphones and puts them on. The microphone is open at the other end. He can hear the roar of the crowds. Then a man's voice comes over the headphones.
This is getting very exciting down here, Harrigan. It'll be almost a shame to spoil the day.
Greenberg looks at the television monitor. He sees a close-up picture of Esther in her bridal gown coming down the red carpet to where Mark is waiting for her beside the wedding canopy on the stage. With a sudden sickening spasm in the stomach, he realizes what's going on and knows that it's out of his control to stop it.
What Greenberg saw on the monitor was the culmination of a bridal procession to live forever in memory. When Mark and his parents had reached the stage, a hush had settled over the amphitheater.
So still was it for a few moments, it seemed the earth had come to rest, right here in Jerusalem, with the blue sky arching over the ancient land and the sun sending long afternoon rays down to play on the people, all waiting now for only one thing, the entry of the bride. Into this space of time and sound, there suddenly steals the bewitching opening chords of Tchaikovsky's love theme from Romeo and Juliet. The famous melody rises hauntingly at first in tenor tones on the organ, as if sung by Romeo, then fades almost to silence, only to well up again in the higher treble as Juliet responds. The melody grows, sung now in duet, finally to fade in soft harp-like chords of quiet expectancy.
Another hush settles. Everyone strains ear and eye for the next moment. Then the organ erupts in thunderous acclaim of the triumphal entry of the bride. Halfway up the amphitheater, behind the official guests coming from the side, through the other spectators, Esther appears. When she reaches the center aisle and steps onto the red carpet, the whole assembly comes to its feet with cheering and applause. Esther has arrived. She pauses there in full and radiant view of every eye. A delicate figure in dazzling white, carrying her bouquet of spring flowers. She stands alone for a few moments, looking out modestly from behind the traditional Jewish veil, down the long stretch of carpet, to the man waiting for her at the wedding canopy. Esther continues her triumphal procession. But there are hundreds of young girls pouring out from the between the rows of people. They are carrying baskets of flowers and showering them all around Esther. The bride is quite cut off from the rest of the party and is slowed down to a crawl. As these little waifs in their party dresses dart all around her, spreading flowers as she comes. Ahead, Mark is watching, excited and proud, by the chuppah on stage. It's at that moment that the MCD receiver crackles into life and he hears Greenberg's voice in his ear above the chords of the bridal march and the cheering and applause of the crowds.
Mark, we've got a problem. I think there's another gunman, and he's right down there where you are. Mark, are you receiving me?
Like the stab of a knife, Mark feels the searing pain of fear at his heart.
Yes, tell me, what is it?
The smile has fled from his face, though he still stands looking down at the beautiful figure of Esther coming towards him no more than 10 meters away.
I'm not sure, but I think it's the cameraman under the commentator's stand, just off there to your right. My nearest men are a few minutes away, but I don't think we've got that much time. He knows something is up, and he may fire at any second.
Mark doesn't wait for another word. With a bound, he leaps off the stage, and in a few strides, he's reached Esther. Watching and describing, Pamela Barrett struggles for the meaning of the sudden change. Good heavens! Whatever is Mark doing? It looks like he can't wait, but no, there's something more to it. He's actually grabbing at Esther, pulling her over to the front row of guests. He's pushed her right down. I can't see either of them now. What is this? Something must be wrong. Here's Mark again. Good Lord, he's coming this way, just sprinting towards us. What is this? What is he doing?
In the minutes that's passed since he leapt from the stage, an eternity of thought has flashed through Mark's mind. He pulled Esther to safety down among the crowd, whispering just loud enough for her to hear, "I'm sorry, darling, there's trouble." With that, his next thought is for everyone else. There's no telling what a panicked gunman might do. He has to keep him distracted. He has to give him a target, himself, but not too easy. In a stride, Mark comes around in front of the first row of guests and starts weaving and dodging his way towards the cameraman. He's at least 30 meters away, a great gulf of distance, endless time, an eternity of waiting for the bullet to smash into his chest, tearing him forever away from Esther.
Up behind the camera, a cold-minded assassin struggles with his own flood of thoughts.
What's happening? Where's Harrigan? They know something. What's he doing? I can't see them. Do they know it's me? How could they know that? The plan's foolproof. They must have got Harrigan. There he is again. He's coming this way. He knows all right. Well, okay, man, I can take you out, and a whole bunch more besides. Now what? Who's this freak? It's that buzzard in the robe again. Well, who is he? Get out of the way, you prick. All right, take it then. What's wrong with this gun? Shoot! Shoot! Oh, nothing. I've got to get out of here.
Up above, looking down on all this, Pamela Barrett continues to describe the spectacle, hardly knowing that she's speaking. I don't know what's happening. Is something wrong? Good heavens. Is there someone else? I thought I saw he's on the monitor, but he's not there really. Am I crazy, that man Baba? I've seen him before, but where is he? Now what? The cameraman is jumping out of his seat. I don't believe this. Mark's at the camera trying to pull him down. What is this? He's getting away. No, no, Mark's got him. He's tackled him on the ground. Here come the soldiers. They've got the cameraman. He's kicking and struggling. They're taking him away. Mark's getting up. He seems okay. Where's Baba? I don't see him anywhere. Oh, I can't tell what's going on.
Up in the house, Greenberg has been watching all of this on the TV monitor, and he tells Mark that he saw someone else, and then Mark suddenly realizes that it was Baba protecting him.
Though still unsure of himself, of all the pieces, Mark knows he has to move quickly to restore calm. No more than 2-3 minutes have elapsed since he launched himself off the stage, so people have not had much time to react. His first thought again goes to Esther. When he gets back to her, Mohammed is there before him, helping her out from the crush of wedding guests.
Darling, are you all right?
Yes, but Mark, look at you. You're all scuffed and bruised.
Oh, I hadn't noticed. Are you okay to go on?
Yes, is it safe now?
I think so. Yes, I'm sure it is. But we have to look to our guests. Mohammed, can we get the music back?
Mohammed nods and signals to the organist to play. Instantly, the grounds and the surrounding hills resonate to the soaring music of the bridal march. Deborah comes down to straighten out Esther's dress. Mark takes his bride by the arm, and together they mount the steps to the stage where the rabbi stands waiting under the chuppah. A tiny cheer breaks out from somewhere in the crowd. Someone picks it up, and in a moment it seems that all Jerusalem is cheering for the marriage of Mark Venture and Esther Fisher. When they stand side by side under the wedding canopy, and the cheering and the music have ceased, Mark quietly asks the rabbi for the microphone to address the people. He turns, and Esther with him. Together they stand side by side, looking out.
Friends, I wasn't scheduled to speak quite yet, but as you've noticed, a number of unexpected things happened in the last few minutes, and I think you deserve an explanation. First of all, for Esther and me, let me thank you all for being so wonderful. It's a great joy for us to know you wish us well. Unfortunately, as you've just seen, there are others who don't. What you saw was an attempt on our lives. I can't give you the details. I don't even know them all myself. But this much I can say. Esther and I owe our lives at this moment to a number of people. And first among them is Kamal Rashid, a young Palestinian who throughout the past week has doggedly warned us about a conspiracy and finally during the past hour was instrumental in turning it aside. Kamal's now lying wounded, I don't know how badly, a short distance from here. May I ask you all to take a moment now with Esther and me to say a prayer in silence for the safe recovery of this brave young man.
For a full minute, a canopy of silence hangs over the amphitheater, as even the children sense with their parents that Mark, Esther, and the world owes much to this man, whoever he might be.
Thank you. The second person to whom we owe our lives is Colonel Greenberg and his Israeli soldiers. Without their constant vigilance, we wouldn't have made it through or to this day. The Colonel is listening to these words as he continues his work all around us here. Thank you, Colonel.
Another wave of cheering and applause breaks out from the crowd.
Finally, I have a word for a man who I'm sure is watching all this and knows that the ruthless scheme that he hatched to kill us and blame it on the Palestinians, is now as thoroughly dead as the rest of his wretched enterprises soon will be. The full truth will come out soon. For now, Esther and I again say thank you to all those who protected us. Life is wonderful. All of you are wonderful. Please join us now for our celebration.
Mark turns back to Rabbi Ben Sabat.
Rabbi, why don't you get this show on the road?
Mark and Esther raise their joined hands once more to the roar of the crowd and turn back. to face the rabbi.